Hello, and welcome to Marketing Room 101, the podcast where I invite marketers from all corners of the industry to join me in this grim room to banish one thing forever. I'm Ben Norman, your host and self-appointed guardian of Room 101, and I set this podcast up because I both deeply love and occasionally loathe this industry, so I wanted to provide a safe space for those who feel the same, to vent and banish their nemeses forevermore. This week, I welcomed one of the most effective marketers in the country into Marketing Room 101, Dom Dwight of Tailors of Harrogate. I first met Dom when I was speaking to senior marketers across the most successful brands in the country to develop the principles of unforgettable brands. And while Dom's knowledge and ability as a marketer speaks for itself, what's really struck me since that first meeting is just how much he genuinely cares about what he does and who he does it for. Above anything, he seems to want to do great work, but also help everyone else do better work too. So here's my conversation in Marketing Room 101 with Dom Dwight. Dom, hello, and welcome to Marketing Room 101.
Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. So before we get stuck in, for the benefit of our listeners, would you mind describing what it's like down here in the depths of Marketing Room 101?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I said thanks for having me, but obviously being invited into Marketing Room 101 is actually being invited into a marketer's hell, right? So yeah, this space is made up of lots of things that we would all recognize from around us. Just all the examples of kind of where marketing has gone wrong. So it might be like an awfully worded out of home poster, or a piece of performance marketing that is interrupting your experience of a website in a way that makes you hate the brand that's trying to get your attention rather than value them. But in Marketing Room 101, it's concentrated so that there's no space between those things. Everywhere you look is an example of marketing practice that makes you wince or howl with pain. It's the sort of place where a marketer needs to close their eyes.
Yeah, and their ears probably as well, because I can imagine it's non-stop, right?
If you're one of those people that's listening to music for free on something like Spotify, it is like being caught in the break forever.
Oh, God. Right. Okay, well, yeah, I'm quite frightened.
Let me out.
Yeah, let me out. Come on. So when I started thinking about doing this podcast, I always wanted to somehow capture that feeling of chatting over a brew or a pint. But so it seems only fitting that we'd kick off with the king of tea and coffee himself. So you've got a brew there. I want you to talk me through what, in your opinion, Dom, is the right way to make a cup of tea.
Sure. Okay. I mean, there are loads of people in this building who would do this better than me, but I have been around here a long time, so I ought to be able to say. I think there's one of the major things to say is that it is still ultimately a very personal thing. So I don't really ever want to say to people, oh, the way you make your tea is wrong. But it's a totally different ballgame if it's a tea that's being made for me. And I think even though tea is so simple in many ways, like everybody's got a ever so slightly different and very specific way that they like their tea. So that's my caveat. But the key thing would be, it's fine if you're going to make your tea in a mug rather than a teapot. That might seem sacrilegious to say, but the truth is, as long as it's kind of, if it's going in the mug and the tea bag's going in without milk,
yep,
and the hot water from the kettle has just been boiled, so it's freshly boiled, it hasn't been boiled before.
Okay.
Because if you keep boiling water, you're basically gradually concentrating the mineral content. That's going to change the flavor of the water. It's going to boil away the oxygen. The water's going to get flatter. So freshly boiled water in the kettle, and then pour it over the bag and give it a gentle stir and then leave it. And this is the crucial thing, is that I think a lot of the time cups of tea in the world suffer because we're in too much of a hurry. And you just
People
need to give it a bit of time.
It.
Yeah, you can do that. So you can squeeze the hell out of your tea bag to get a stronger brew faster. But you're basically going to end up extracting quite a lot of bitterness out of the tea, and you won't get some of the sort of more rounded flavors that come with time. So our advice usually is 3 to 5 minutes. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever waited 5 minutes for anything consciously, but it's actually quite a long time.
Yeah.
But that's the key, really, is just leave it to brew 3 to 5 minutes, give it a little bit of a squeeze, but not too vigorous a squeeze. And then, you know, your choice of milk or not and how much, that's all up to you.
So how to make a brew might be the most useful thing anybody ever gets out of this podcast. So there we go. You'll
might be the most useful thing you ever get out of me ever.
Okay, so before we take a look at what you've brought with you today, you do have a new job. You are Strategy and Innovation Director.
That's
now,
right, yeah.
That's a move from Marketing Director. When did that happen?
So I started the new role in January of this year.
Okay, so quite recently. What does that involve, and how does that mean that your role has now changed?
I mean, the main thing is it means I'm no longer leading the marketing team. And they have become part of a bigger team that's focused on the delivery of our business growth in the UK. And while I don't lead them anymore, still work really closely with most of the senior members of that team on the areas in my world where we're basically looking for the new areas of growth. So either through innovation or through diversification. And I think the reason why we made that change was, you know, the business has done really well, particularly in the last 10 years or so, great amounts of growth. But I think there's this recognition that we can't just rely on carrying on doing what we've always done, that there are going to be things that hit us, that come towards us from the future that we don't quite know what they are, and therefore we don't quite know how to be ready. So we're trying to force ourselves to put some resource that looks further out into the future and further out across the world, just to get a bit more of a handle on like what's our context, what's coming towards us. So that's my area, really. Is I've got some brilliant insight people in my team, and I've got some brilliant innovation guys in my team, and together they are out there trying to make sure that we understand our consumers better, that we understand who our potential consumers might be one day, and that we've got a better handle on like what is coming towards us in the wider world. And that could be good and bad, right? So that some of the things coming towards us could be regulatory change that means the plastic content of our products is going to be problematic. But they could also be, oh, there's this new trend that started in the Far East, but is gradually spreading across Europe and America. And this could be a interesting new product category that we could get into.
Do you think it's possible to do that role and do the marketing role? How much has that restricted you in recent years, where you thought, actually, I'm trying to get this campaign out of the door, I'm trying to deal with this retailer, I'm trying to do this new product launch,
yeah,
whilst also trying to have an eye on the horizon as well?
Well, it's a very astute question, really. I think that was one of the key reasons to make that change. And that is something I can kind of speak to from a personal point of view as an individual in that role, is that the previous kind of remit of marketing director, where you've got all of that, you know, like the sort of smooth running and the delivery of our kind of day to day and our yearly plan is colossal. And it's also so amazingly important in terms of driving business performance. But trying to create some bandwidth so you can think beyond that and think in the next 5 to 10 years, what kinds of challenges might we encounter that mean we need to be preparing now? It's almost impossible. So that was a really key thing. So for me as an individual, for our teams, but probably most importantly as a business, I think we just reached a point where we thought we actually need to devote some resource to specifically not looking at the here and now and actually looking further out to the far horizon.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. So in recent years, like you mentioned, that last 10 years of growth for Yorkshire Tea, for Tailors of Harrogate. If we look at the sort of recent track record, you and the team have taken Yorkshire Tea from third to first in the market. You've done some of the most effective and iconic advertising in the UK. You've grown a coffee brand to become a household name, just launched an incredible campaign for Tailors. And you've developed some of the maddest MPD I've seen in tea. So what do you think is next, both for Dom Dwight or for Tailors of Harrogate? That you're allowed to talk about.
Yeah. I'll be juggling either, well, I don't know if I can talk about that yet, or I don't have an answer. But it's an interesting question because it makes me notice that sort of my fate and the business's fate feel very intertwined at the minute. You know, it seems strange to think we've reached this point as a business where we need to start thinking and acting differently. Probably at the same time where personally in my career, I felt like I'd been doing the same role for a long time. And I needed a change. So it's really nice that this sort of moment, this new chapter kind of works from a business and from a personal point of view. It's great that you referenced the work that we've done. I mean, obviously the really sort of famous story is the growth of Yorkshire Tea, but you also mentioned Taylor's Coffee. And I think probably one of our proudest achievements in the last 10 years has been coming up with coffee bags and then launching coffee bags and it being a tremendous success, you know, because coffee bags is a weird piece of NPD because in a way it wasn't a proper innovation because coffee bags actually already existed in the market. It's just that they'd been launched many, many decades ago had never really taken off, and they had become kind of completely overlooked by most consumers, apart from a small group of people. But because it was a small market that wasn't really going anywhere, the people involved in it were not exactly lavishing that category of love and attention. So we just struck upon a slightly different way of making them that made them taste significantly better.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you did that, it suddenly became a, why on earth isn't there more being made of this category? Because, you know, the big sort of drivers in coffee where people are constantly seeking more convenient ways of a better quality coffee. And here you have this very low cost. You don't need a fancy capsule machine, just need the same kettle you've got. I love that. But I suppose the challenge now and the reason why I'm mentioning that is what's the next one of that?
Yeah.
And I don't mean that that has to be a coffee idea. It might be that it's a tea idea. Maybe it's a Yorkshire tea idea, or maybe it's none of those things and it's something beyond that. But as a business, we've got lots of people who love our products, love our brands, say lots of nice things about us. The truth is, though, I think if you look back over like the last 15 years, we haven't been that innovative. I don't think we've launched that many new things. And of the new things we've launched, many of them haven't really particularly taken off. It's only really coffee bags that feels like it was the proper big firework in the sky.
I think there's a challenge as well, isn't there, to avoid innovation for the sake of innovation.
Yes.
Actually, how do you make sure that innovation is, there's a job to be done? For coffee bags, you look at it, and the launch campaign is still one of my favorites, where it was such an obvious idea. Every time someone's tried inventing it, they've come to some form of unfortunate demise. Like, the best innovation should feel obvious, shouldn't they? They should feel like, straight away, I understand why that exists.
But I think it's why it's one of my favorite campaigns I've worked on, because it felt like you had a lovely line between the truth behind the product to the truth of the message we were trying to put out into the world. And that just that moment when the penny dropped, when our agency, Lucky Generals, kind of came back to us to say, like, we think this might be the way to position this, is like actually run with the whole why didn't we think of this before line, which is something we'd been saying to each other already. And they just gradually realized, like, that's your strongest way forward here. So I love that.
So without further ado, you are down here in Marketing Room 101 because you want to banish something from the marketing world. I would like to know now what you would like to submit, please.
I would like to submit dullness, please, Ben.
Okay. In what sense would you like to commit dullness to the abyss? What is it that frustrates you about dullness? Because I'm fully bought in. It's the scourge of the industry. I read a stat recently around, I think in 1994... favorability towards advertising was at its highest ever, and then I think it actually was higher than the programming it sat between, because you had five channels and there were some brilliant ads going on the TV, so people actually liked the ads more than the programming sat between. I think now it's less than half what it used to be or something. It's around 25%, so there's a reason, and I think the reason is dullness. I think you're absolutely right, but what is it about dullness?
Well, so there's a few things, right? I think given that advertising is by its very nature interruptive and we're trying to get people's attention, the significant failure of our industry to actually get people's attention most of the time is shocking. And it just seems such a crying shame when the industry is populated by such brilliant, talented people. How do we collectively end up producing stuff that's so meh all the time? I think it was a study by System One that did, they did something that showed that something like 52% of TV audiences, 52% of advertising elicits no reaction.
No emotional reaction whatsoever.
And I mean, even if you just think about that from a kind of efficiency and effectiveness point of view, that's pretty poor, isn't it? That advertising's kind of not managing to deliver in that way. So that's one thing. The other thing is that, like a lot of people, I have picked up on the work by Peter Field and Adam Morgan, this whole thing around the extraordinary cost of dull, which basically just highlighted beige advertising. And when they compare it to ads that using their criteria, they've kind of called out as it's somehow more distinctive, more interesting. What they've gradually proven is that you just get more bang for your buck. So a boring ad requires a lot more media investment behind it to get seen, get noticed, to have any kind of impact. So from a sort of business rationale point of view, that's why I'm volunteering dullness. But my personal reason for volunteering dullness goes to your original point, which is when you're talking about in 1994, ads were often liked more than the programs. Well, that's really when I was paying attention to ads as a teenager. And I think I didn't know back then that I would ever work in a field that had anything to do with advertising, but I watched a lot of telly in the 90s and the early 80s, probably too much, probably, you know, to some extent slightly raised. Yeah, I was slightly raised by the telly as a third parent. But it just means that I've got a fondness for advertising from the late 80s and the early 90s. And I know nostalgia can be very selective, so I might be writing out quite a lot of terrible advertising. But I just remember there being a kind of sense that there was like a cultural movement behind a lot of particularly British advertising, where it just felt like the creativity was on fire all the time. And ads were silly, or they were moving, or they were witty, or they were, you know, musical. It's just, I just feel like we've gone down to like embers rather than a fire. And I would just love to see something come back into the ad industry where more and more ads are willing to take a few risks to either be funny or to move people. And just that the industry is aware, like, of what a total waste of time it is to produce something that doesn't do any of those things.
Yeah, you used the word risk there, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because when we think of doing something bold or brave, we talk, you know, in inverted commas, there's nothing brave about it, is there? There's no, the biggest risk is seeing advertising as a transfer of information,
yeah,
assuming you have an invested audience. I can't remember where the quote is from, but I think it was in Paul Feldrick's book where he references advertising as being the opportunity to perform on a stage, not a private game reserve to shoot a bird out of the sky. Or I can't remember the exact analogy, but it's, you know, it's an opportunity to attract attention. You don't have the right to attention, do you?
Yeah, absolutely. The one for me was more this idea that if kind of advertising was essentially like you're interrupting someone at a party, well, you better have something good to say.
Yes. Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
The point, really.
Yeah.
And it just feels like at the moment there's too much reliance on the ability to interrupt the person. And then there's not much thought gone into, right, now you've got that person's attention. How are you going to do something with it, and do something with it that has a lasting impact for you and your business, but possibly has like a positive impact for that person as well? This is going to sound completely pretentious, but one of the things that advertising could be doing to be like a force for good in the world, it's just cheering people up by being good. I just think entertainment isn't valueless. It is a thing that kind of like can actually, if I think back to the days when it felt like the British advertising industry in particular was just amazing. It's like, it's also a source of kind of like national pride and belief that we are a creative powerhouse. So come on, let's be one.
Love that. How do you think you, over the past 10, 15 or so years, how do you think you've avoided the trap of dullness?
Okay, good question. Firstly, I think learning from others. So my old boss, who was marketing director before me, Simon Isles, who is now our MD over at Betty's, our sister company. So when Simon came in as marketing director, we had already done some really interesting stuff. And I think we'd probably done some stuff that you would look at and think, oh, yeah, you were bold. And yeah, that was funny. That was entertaining. But I think Simon brought like a whole extra level of us discovering more confidence and being a bit braver about how to express our personality. So I can't remember the exact year that Simon joined. I think it might be 2012, 2013. But from that point onwards, I think there's a step up in the kind of tone of the Yorkshire Tea advertising, where we were more intentionally funny and a bit braver about how we behaved. But it was a learning process as well. So you've kind of got the step changes that occur when somebody significant is brought in like Simon. But then you've also got the gradual learning of, as we did small things, like when we did things on social media, I think we learned a lot from the way that we spoke to people and the way we were spoken to or spoken about on Twitter, that gradually helped us sort of get a better reading of how should we behave, what is expected from us, what can we get away with, what lands flat because we didn't put enough kind of thought into it, you know, all those things. Those gradually accumulated to get us to the point where by 2016, when we appointed Lucky Generals and when I took over as marketing director, that's when we also started this Where Everything's Done Proper campaign, which is where we started recruiting celebrities to do jobs around the factory. I just think there was a kind of an accumulation of small tests that we learned and built, and kind of key people that had joined the business that just gave us the collective intelligence and the collective belief to keep stepping things up.
Do you think there's been an aspect of working in social media, if you do not entertain and you don't do something interesting, it doesn't work. Therefore, if you've done that at the start of your career, as you've gone through, you're never going to lose that thought, are you, that it has to be entertaining in order to work, rather than buy the media, stick a message in front of people and then just assume that they're going to pay attention to it.
Yeah, I was listening to another podcast where John Hegarty said something about imagining a day when marketing directors are no longer called marketing directors, they're called entertainment directors. Because of this, just this idea that in this kind of new media ecosystem that we're moving towards, if you're not entertaining in some way, then you just won't get noticed. I mean, there's always an issue with this, which is that is overlooking the fact there's an awful lot to being a marketing director that's not about comms, it's not about advertising, it's, you know, 100%. About the kind of nuts and bolts of having a good P&L, all those kind of things. But there's a point there that I like. I think there's also, well, there's kind of two things coming together here, right? There's the bit that's about me, which is just before I worked here, I worked in magazines. And I think that was a good grounding in being very, very focused on the audience. What is the audience going to get out of this article, out of this magazine, and framing everything you do around that? And then social media did the same. So like you are getting at, I do think there's been a key learning for me around focus on the audience value and build around that. But I think the second thing is just I've been really, really fortunate to be part of a lovely family business that's quite quirky. You know, there's a willingness and a desire to see our marketing be fun and interesting and a force for good by being entertaining in a way that maybe in other businesses you just have lots of scrutiny about, like, well, explain it to me logically, show me the ROI. And obviously we still do the ROI bit, but we've got this shared belief that we want the ads to be something we're proud of.
So we are going to banish dullness. Dullness is going to be trapped in here in Marketing Room 101 forever. It's going to make your job a little bit harder.
Yeah.
But that's fine. But while you're here, before you leave, do you want to take anything with you and reintroduce it?
Yes, I definitely do. So down here in Marketing Room 101, something unfortunate has been put here by mistake and it should never have been sent here because it's precious. And that is sing-alongable ads and jingles.
Sing-alongable ads.
I think overall, like, this episode is going to maybe cast the impression that I'm quite a nostalgic person. On these subjects, I think I am, but I think too few ads leverage the power of audio nowadays. But I'm not really meaning, like, you know, the classic Levi's advert thing, because although that's definitely true that we should all spend more time and energy getting the music exactly right in an ad, what I'm specifically talking about is ads that had a song that was kind of built to be sung by kids in the playground the following morning. And we just don't see enough of that, you know. So the closest example I could think of was, like, I just sold my car to We Buy Any Car, which is quite an irritating, catchy jingle.
There's a fine line, isn't there, between a catchy jingle and, like you say, I don't know what the better phrase or what the phrase is, but I'm going to go with sing-alongable ads, which is you want to sing along to it, or it's just an ad that gets stuck in your mind. Either way, I think it works. But
Yeah. Like our latest Taylor's coffee ad is all about the fact that we're a family business and we've decided to set it to music. And I think it's made the ad stand out more and be probably more entertaining. But I don't know how catchy it is, you know, because I don't think that's what we had in mind when we wrote it. We wrote it to be kind of funny and to make a point. But when I sit back, I think the real gold is when ads don't just kind of capture attention in the moment, but they stay in people's minds, you know, like they're either talked about because they're funny or the song gets sung because it's catchy and silly. And the pinnacle for me would be from my childhood, which was the Milky Way ad, the red car, the blue car had a bass. Which I promised I'm not going to sing, so I'm not going to sing. But I swear, I think I know all the lyrics to that song now.
That's going to be stuck in my head for the next 24 hours. Interestingly, when you mentioned Tommy Cards, I was thinking the red car and the blue car had a race. All Red wants to do is stuff his face.
He eats everything he sees from trucks of prickly trees. But Smart Old Blue, he took the Milky Way.
Yes. There you go. Right. So love that one. And also, if you like a lot of chocolate on your biscuit,
join our club.
There you go. It does work. It does absolutely work. I think the work that Orlando Wood and System One have done on this, I think in Lemon, Orlando's first book, there's a lot in there dedicated to the difference between a voiceover and a soundtrack. And I know that doesn't differentiate between sing-alongable or memorable. But yeah, just it absolutely works, doesn't it? And I think when you're out of the room and you're making your cup of Yorkshire tea, you can still hear that ad in the other room. You can still so it's much more than just the visual, isn't it?
And
think I don't know what the reason is, but I don't know if it's because we're spending more and more time on social media with our phones on mute, and therefore a lot of ads nowadays, music doesn't play a part. And then is that taking something away from? I don't know. I don't know why, but I absolutely want to let you go with that. Take it back up there and let's get investing into music and into sing-alongable tracks for ads more and more.
I think the other thing is there's a kind of link, I guess, between the thing I'm putting into Room 101 and the thing I'd like to take out. Not that music and sing-alongableness is the sole answer to dullness, but it's part of it. It's this idea of just trying to make ads more excellent. And one of them would be at least utilize sound in some way. Mm. And then beyond utilizing sound, is there a way that you could use sound in a like particularly creative or a particularly distinctive way? And that might be just by using a really good piece of music. And also for marketing directors and the businesses actually valuing the money that you put into picking the right piece of music. But what I suppose I'm trying to say is that there's another level beyond this is what if you could do something with the music in your ad that means that you actually put it into culture.
I wonder if it's also just such a difficult craft. I think actually to do this, you need to bring out the people who can write a sing-alongable ad.
Where have they gone?
The writers in the who could write The Red Car and The Blue Car Had a Race. If they're down here, we need to return those guys, I think, because that's a craft.
Well, perhaps what you've got is that the kind of the talented copywriters with a gift for rhyming and music, maybe they have now got other places to go, like their content creators and their TikToking and things. But probably the sadder truth is more that talent is still there. It's just that our processes, the way that clients go about deciding what work to buy, is not encouraging it. And because I bet like if there's anyone in advertising that's listening to this, there's probably loads of like young creatives out there. They're like, I've got loads of ideas for musical ads and sing-along ads, but they just don't go anywhere. Yeah. So this is probably more a message to marketing directors. It's like, don't overlook that. I think that's such an exciting opportunity to add like more power to your ads.
Okay, I'm fully sold. I'm going to take dullness from you and I'm going to lock it in here. You're going to take sing-alongable ads and anybody who can write them back up there with you. You're going to distribute them throughout the industry and the world will be a better place thereafter, I think. So Dom Dwight, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
So that was my conversation with Dom Dwight, and no matter how hard I tried, I could not get him to sing. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. If you've really enjoyed it, please share it with other people. And if you've hated it, please remain silent and don't tell anyone outside of your immediate family. Marketing Room 101 is not sponsored by Principles Agency. If it was, I probably wouldn't be recording this under a blanket in my bedroom. However, as they are my employer, and they do give me a free day off every week to do things like this, I think it's only right if I give them a quick plug. Principles is the longest running brand comms agency in Leeds, and we create, activate and build unforgettable brands that come to mind quicker and stay there longer. We do this using a set of principles the team and I developed. If you want to find out more, please drop me a message on LinkedIn or head to principlesagency.co.uk. Thank you and bye-bye.